You're listening to Crosstalk, Conversations with Curtis. Crosstalk, Conversations with Curtis is brought to you by
Ray Cruz and MCF Mortgage. With a stellar reputation as an outstanding mortgage lender, Ray Cruz serves the lending needs of real estate professionals, builders, and individual homebuyers in Maryland, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Texas, California, Florida, Illinois, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Ray believes that integrity is the cornerstone of his business, and helping you achieve your home financing goals is his business. Located in the heart of Bethesda, Maryland, contact Ray P. Cruz today to get started. Your home mortgage or refinance options await. Call 301-761-2278 or visit raypcruz.com. Ray P. Cruz, mortgages intelligently.
For more than 20 years, I have seen Gene the Barber for my haircuts. I am proud to say that Gene the Barber is now the owner of a new shop, his own shop, Max Life Barber and Salon. Max Life is family friendly with barbers and stylists for men, women, and children. Located at 6859 New Hampshire Avenue in Tacoma Park, Maryland, Max Life Barber and Salon is now the new home of Gene the Barber. Of course, you'll get Gene's signature service, but now Gene has several barbers to choose from. Schedule an appointment today by calling 240-687-7253.
A Squared Home and Office Solutions is the go-to source for home or office network and audio-visual solutions. We can help with smart home integration, wireless networking, media rooms, security systems, and more. We will link technology to your lifestyle seamlessly. Read our reviews online. Visit homeandofficesolutions.com for more info or call 240-356-8832. A Squared Home and Office Solutions. We are home advisor screened and approved.
You're listening to Crosstalk, Conversations with Curtis. Here's your host, Curtis Cross.
Welcome to Conversations with Curtis. I am your host, Curtis Cross, and as always, I'm excited to be here with you today. Today, we're going to get into a great conversation, but first, I want to thank our sponsors, Ray Cruz and MCF Mortgage, Gene the Barber, A Squared Home and Office Solutions, and of course, Dynamic DJ Entertainment. Be sure to connect with me socially at Curtis Talks on Instagram and Twitter, and of course, at www.curtistalks.com. Also, take a listen to our other podcasts, Crosstalk, The Curtis and Paula Show, a lifestyle, love, marriage, and parenthood podcast. You'll hear all about the day-to-day life of me and Paula. Take a Teal with Turner and O'Neill, a local and national sports podcast hosted by me, along with coaches Steve Turner and Casey O'Neill. The Midnight Truck Stop and 911 Radio. Both of these podcasts are hosted by Big T and the Blue Knight. You'll hear stories from truckers, 911 calls, law enforcement officers, and a host of interesting guests. All of these podcasts can be found on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcast content. Once again, you are listening to Crosstalk, Conversations with Curtis, and I thank you for joining the conversation. Today, I'd like to get into the conversation with a young lady who I've known for 20 plus years. Oddly enough, I met her at her college graduation before I actually even knew her. I attended this graduation. As I attended the graduation with a mutual friend, I did not know Katie at the time, of course. I met her that day, and it has turned into a lifelong friendship. She's stuck with me now, and our audience will enjoy her, I am sure. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's go ahead and welcome to the conversation, Miss Katie Talbot. What's up, Katie?
Oh, not too much today. I love the wording of stuck with you.
You are stuck with me. There's nothing you can do about it. I'm here. I'm like old luggage. You just can't get rid of it, right?
Right. Thank goodness.
Right. Well, good. Katie, what's the weather where you are right now?
Oh, it's, let's see, mid-50s right here. A little chilly. I just came back from a work trip and had to close all my storm windows this morning because I was really cold last night. A little breezy. Fall is definitely here. And hopefully we don't get too much snow this
uh-oh.
Winter.
Uh-oh. Well, we are probably 10 degrees warmer, but I can do short sleeves outside. I can do that comfortably. So so we're good there. Okay, let's get right into it. You're a career educator, an activist, a dynamic woman, and you've been through a thing or two. Let's start before graduation and where you're from, who you grew up with, and all that good stuff.
All right. Well, I guess my first grow up was in Portland, Maine. My parents also grew up here in Portland, Maine, and you know, they both come from pretty big families, and I'm the second child of seven children. Grew up in a house in Portland, Maine with a one bathroom, so that was interesting to
seven,
share with you.
Whoa. So seven and your parents, 8, 9.
Yeah.
One bathroom.
Yeah, interesting to grow up with two sisters and then the four brothers are younger than us. My parents did put a second bathroom into the basement, so.
But who wants to go to the basement to use exactly. the bathroom?
So the morning routines, especially in high school, was definitely down to some clockwork that, looking back now, really, my parents had to put a lot of logistics in place to have a successful
childhood. We have to leave here at 7:15 in the morning to take the kids to school. Paula goes to work. I take the kids to school, drop one off, drop the other off, come back home. It's about an hour round trip. But we wake up at about 6:15, so that gives us an hour for four people to get showered, get dressed, have some breakfast and roll out. Like, what is that routine like with nine of you? And now, did mom work? Mom and dad both work, or?
They both worked. Yeah, my mom worked for most of her life, or most of her career, as a letter carrier with the post office, and my father was in sales. So sometimes she was already out on the, you know, at the post office before we were getting up. My father would get his shower and knock on my door before he got in, so I would be ready when he got out.
Right.
And then my sister would follow. Fortunately, in high school, at first we got rides to school, but otherwise we all lived within walking distance of our school. So not too much in terms of carpooling or anything. And I got my license when I was a sophomore. So from then on, I had a lot of responsibility with that, as well as my older sister. And,
you know, we're talking 20 plus years. And the beauty of life and friendships and all of this is it continues to evolve. Don't know the last time I learned something new about you, but did not know your mother was a mail carrier. So I'm learning something here.
Yep.
And that was a career?
She sure was. Yeah, she worked with a phone company before that. And then she worked with the post office and did the sorting. I remember she had like this wooden thing that she or my father made that she would do her training with the sorting of the mail. And then at home practice. And then she picked up letter delivering the mail. And I think she got injured with that, in which kind of ended that letter carrier part of that career. So I'm not really sure exactly how many years she delivered mail, but I remember pressing her uniforms and helping to get her ready for work, of course, too. So it's definitely a lot of teamwork. You know,
and that's not easy
for a family of nine.
That's not easy in Portland winters delivering mail.
No, and I think that's where some of the accidents that she got in, maybe slipping on the ice in the truck, or somebody else would run into her. So, yeah, not easy at all. Just had to be cautious while you're also bundled up and carrying mail. So,
yes. So we're talking Portland, Maine, home of the Portland Sea Dogs. Am I correct?
Yes.
I think I only know that because you have told me that.
They weren't around too much. Oh, sorry?
I said I think I only know that because you told me that one time.
Yeah, and I don't think they were established while I was like living here as a child. I remember going to hockey games with the Maine Mariners, which was essentially, I think their stadium was maybe three quarters of a mile from our house. So we would go there occasionally, and we didn't have a baseball team until after I moved away and went to college.
But I'll tell you what you do, you do Red Sox and you do Patriots and you do Celtics, right?
Yes, definitely. That was lots of cheering for those teams in our houses, for sure. And the Bruins.
Excellent. Bruins, so I can't forget about them. I have seen that stadium. Is it TD? It's not TD Bank. What is it?
I don't want to lie to you. I don't know what it is now.
Okay. Well, I have been to Maine. I got to Maine a couple of summers ago. And the two things that I take back from Maine that I did not care for was, one, they promised that I would see whales when I went whale watching. And of course, if you don't see it on the excursion, they promise you anytime you come back within 2 years, you get to get back on this thing and see zero whales again for free. And I'm like, I'm not going to be back here again, let alone the the fact that when I'm in when I'm in Alaska, I don't pay for an excursion and I'm putt-putt golfing with Adam and I see tons of whales out there for free. Well, not for free. You pay for the cruise, but you get right. it. And then where's this donut place I went to that I don't like, Katie?
Holy Donut, I think.
Look, I'm going to tell you right now.
There's a couple locations I haven't been to. I haven't been to one in a few years, but.
Well, you can keep on not going, Katie, because I got off a cruise ship and I stood in line and sent you pictures from standing in line to go to Holy Donut. And I got there and it was just okay to me. Others loved it. It's not my thing. I know we did the lobster. What did the girls do? What is the thing that Paula would have gotten up there? She went to a restaurant and what? Not the donut place, at a restaurant. What did she get?
Oh, did she get to pick out her own lobster?
No, lobster roll. Is that?
Oh, something? Lobster roll. Yeah, you have to do that.
I'm not a seafood guy, but she definitely did that.
You're not going to.
I did a burger. That's what I do. You know me. I eat a burger. So
I've heard some of your podcasts, and I think I've enjoyed some barbecues at your house.
So. You may have. No one's here to say yes or no, but you may have. So look, you get yourself here to DC. And as you told me last week, you grew up here as well. So what drew you to DC? What kept you here?
Yeah, I felt like I misspoke when I was talking about, I grew up in DC, but I guess my sister kind of helped put it in perspective. Like you kind of did. You moved to DC as an 18-year-old for college. And that's like the second growing up. So when I was in, I've always, for some reason, had some enjoyment of math and was pretty good at it. And when I was a junior or the summer before senior year, I went to engineering camp at Catholic University. And so I ended up going to Catholic to study civil engineering.
Okay.
So that's what brought me into DC. And after about a semester, I decided, let's not do civil engineering anymore. And I decided to change my major to elementary education. I used to say still building bridges, just kind of different bridges there.
Love the analogy. Love it.
So I studied elementary education. And then after I graduated, I started teaching in DC public school. So I taught in DC from Bunker Hill to Choice Academy, Kenilworth Elementary, and then finally Stuart Hobson. Over 17 years, a couple different positions throughout those years, but mostly still impacting math eventually. At first, of course, as an elementary teacher, self-contained, so I taught everything that an elementary school teacher would teach.
Right.
And then I moved to more specifically math. So
I'm an instructional. We probably talked about the Bunker Hill thing, but my sister went to Bunker Hill. Clearly, you know, before you were there, I think my dad went to Bunker Hill. So that's South Dakota Avenue, right?
Yep, South Dakota, Michigan Ave, over in Northeast DC. Nice, like neighborhood school. Lots of, from what I remember, lots of like single family homes there. Mm-hmm. Not that you know, that kind of makes an impact on the school, on the education, of course, but established families, long, you know, some people you'd say, oh, my mother went to school here, my grandmother went to school here.
I mean, I spent a lot of time over there, you know, the 12th Street area. You know, my grandmother, my grandfather had a house over there for the last 70 years or so, over there right on 13th Place, as I think most people know. My grandmother passed earlier this year at the age of, 96, but South Dakota, Michigan, 12th Street, Providence Hospital, that Catholic U area. You may not have known this, and you probably have been to this store before. Brookland Service Star Hardware. Have you been to that hardware store over there?
Is it up on more on 12th Street toward Irving?
Yep.
Or Monroe or something? Yeah, I'm probably.
I worked there. I learned how to cut keys there. So I started at McDonald's on South Dakota Avenue. And then
The one McDonald's in the area that didn't have, I think it was one of the first ones, maybe. It doesn't have a
drive-through. Correct. Yes, I worked at that one. And I got fired because they assumed I was 15, but my birthday didn't come until November of that year. So I was 14 working there that summer of, I guess, 86, 87, whatever year it was. So I got fired from working there, but then I worked at Brooklyn Service Star Hardware, and they started me on keys, holding the thing, making the keys with the shavings of the keys getting lodged under my skin. And I made a whole bunch of keys for Catholic U kids. And the owner said, look, the key says, do not copy. You're not supposed to copy.
Right, but do not duplicate right on the back of that.
Yes,
key.
He said, but go ahead and make them because these are dorm students who need an extra key, blah, blah, blah. So I made my share of keys over there at Brooklyn Service Star Hardware. I absolutely did.
Yeah, I did not know that. There's a Subway across the street now. Kitty O'Shea's was right across the street. Spent a few nights there.
I went to a couple of restaurants over there in my day as well. And you and I are not super far apart in age, but you would have, if I was 15 working there, you would have been younger than 15. You wouldn't have been in the D.C. area yet.
I would have still been in Maine, going to high school here in Maine at that time. So.
Katie, I have several questions I want to get to, but something right. that really strikes a fire in me that you mentioned, you know, educating and all this. Education is, I talk to a lot of teachers. Paula's a teacher. My grandmother was a teacher. I have aunts that are teachers. Paula's mother's a teacher. The one thing I say to the teachers that I know is that I hope they let you teach again one day. And I don't think teachers are teaching anymore. I think they're teaching to a test. I think there are so many protocols in place and things they have to do. I'm not understanding what's going on with teaching these days. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've been in a lot of classrooms. My job brings me to a lot of classrooms over the past few years. So for instance, this week I was in a high school in Pennsylvania. Last week I was in a middle school and an elementary school in that same district. I think that they still have a good amount of choice in how they, again, I'm speaking very generally, in what they're doing. Yes, there is a set of standards, and there's always, unfortunately, a standardized test at the end of the year, which holds a lot more stake than I would like to see, of course. Puts a lot of pressure on the schools, on the teachers, on the students, on the families. And stuttering a little
no,
bit.
No, no. Well,
that.
See, my thing is you have Maryland functional reading, Maryland functional writing. You have MAP R, you have MAP M, you have all of these things. And it doesn't seem like it's annual. It seems like it's fall, it's spring. And, you know, it seems like teachers are spending so much time just simply trying to teach the kids how to get those answers right. But, you know, I can go on and on. This could be a whole nother podcast, but, you know, but we're graduating students. Schedule. And look, we have eighth graders now who missed half of their sixth grade year, all of their seventh grade year, and they're being asked to acclimate in a situation where they're the leaders of a middle school, where they have not been socially involved in damn near 2 years with their peers. So they don't know how to lead. They're learning differently. You know, when we went into a virtual model, you know, what was a 6.5 or 7 hour school day became 45 minutes of instruction. There was no science. There was no social studies. There was math and English, if you can call it that. But we're going to graduate a group of young people eventually who don't know how to balance a checkbook. They don't know what, you know, debt is. They don't know what compound interest is, but we're going to make sure they know Common Core, which is a bunch of garbage. And I don't get paid by the school system. So you can tell me where I can say whatever I want. And it's my doggone podcast, but it's a bunch of garbage. I sat in a back to school night when Chelsea was in kindergarten, and they were explaining to me what this Common Core thing is. And I looked at Paula then and I said, this is a bunch of horse shit. I don't know why 113 minus 88 can't be 11, 13, whatever the math is, why it simply can't be 25 or whatever it is. It's got to be, you have to take this number out. What's wrong with the way we did math? But that's another story. It's just, we're trying to reinvent the wheel. We're trying to overdo it. We're trying to teach to this new way of learning. In the meantime, I don't see, look, we talk about the generation of our parents or grandparents being the greatest generation ever. What was wrong with the way they learned? This generation sent people to the moon. This generation has a space station that we can now, I can log on to Smithsonian Television or NASA TV, and I can see what's going on planets that I can't even pronounce. But we've got kids who don't know how to balance checkbooks. Katie, where are we going wrong here?
Well, I'm also not paid by Common Core or anything like that. I think the rollout and the talk around Common Core when it was unrolled was not handled appropriately. I think there should have been 1 year at a time instead of all at once. So let's just start with kindergarten. In my perspective, a Common Core might be slightly different. I see it more as an alignment of the standards. So here are the things that you learn in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, so that it's common across the country.
Oh God, Katie, Mississippi learns different than California, than Illinois, than Maryland.
And not only that, so if you were in third grade in Washington, DC, and you moved to Minnesota or someplace else, did what you learned in DC already happen in Minnesota, or is it about to happen in fourth grade so that you either missed it or you have to learn it twice? So those are a couple of different things that could have happened when they weren't aligned across the country. So I think that from my understanding, that might have been the intention of that. Now on top of that came, so that's a great idea, right? On top of that, school districts were choosing different resources and different methods for implementing those or teaching those standards. So, and I think that's where some of the issues might lie with people, where it's not rolled out in terms of like their PR for the Common Core. So, if you're thinking that you learned an algorithm for subtracting 113 minus 88. And as a math teacher, we may use various strategies. We might use a number line. We might use partial differences. We might, you know, different ways to look at that problem because people learn in different ways. So, and I don't think that those things are requirements. I think it's just sharing other ways of thinking so we can do more mental math and approach a problem from a wider perspective. And then hopefully apply that to other challenges or problems that we see in life that we might have to solve a math problem. So it's a little tricky. I'm obviously a proponent of various ways of solving problems and thinking because, again, I'm in a lot of math classes every day.
Right.
And I do want to say just that in defense of the teachers during the virtual learning, first of all, they were, and I know you agree with me, hopefully you agree with me, that is a very challenging year and a half. And I think that a lot was put on their shoulders in a very quick time, and they still really gave it their very, very best in trying to address the learning needs of all of their students. Like I said, I was in virtual sessions with teachers all last year as well, and they really gave all they had to deliver the best instruction for their students.
Well, you know, so here's where I am in terms of agreeing with you. Clearly, moving to a virtual model surprised everyone. We were not prepared for that. We did not know that would happen. I think the issue that I have is that there was an expectation put on the educators to deliver a platform and a format that was not thought through well enough through no fault of the systems, because this was thrust upon them. You know, at first it turned out to be, we'll take an early spring break. But, you know, a week or 10 days is not enough to put in a whole system that we're all learning for the first time. And, you know, on day one, everything crashed. On day one, no one could sign on. So, no, I think the pressure was put on the teachers to perform to an outcome that was unrealistic in its expectations. You know, so when I say, you know, they went from 6.5 or 7 hours of school to 45 minutes, I certainly wouldn't blame the teacher for that. I wouldn't blame Adam's teacher because she took that 45 and made it an hour and a half is what she did. She went beyond that. But, you know, there was an expectation, and it was this not holier than thou, but this was this presumptive expectation. We've rolled it out. You guys go do it. Well, before you hire a teacher to come into your school or the classroom, there are trainings involved. There were no trainings. There were nothing. I'm not saying they should have had trainings. I'm saying the end result and that expectation I don't think it could be achieved. It simply couldn't. We have access problems. We have kids with parents in throughout the country who don't speak, you know, the language. You have kids in eighth grade or kids in sixth grade or kids in 12th grade who are smarter than their parents. And if they're having trouble, the parents can't help them. And we were in a matter of, you know, we can't be in person, so I can't give you that, you know, support you need. So no, it was a debacle.
Yeah, it was incredibly challenging. I mean, I was in a school district on March 11th, 2020, and the superintendent came in to talk to us. And, you know, she was telling teachers, as nobody would expect, like, hey, get a 2-week packet ready for your students. And lo and behold, here we are. Fortunately, a lot of the school districts I supported last year didn't have a standardized test at the end of the year. It was really just, let's do what we can at the time we have. I mean, teachers were battling students that may be one of seven children at home. And if you only have so much bandwidth on your internet, or your older brother or sister or younger brother and sister are beside you in the same room trying to learn, it's really hard to come off of mute and share or think about being on camera or...
Hell, you know, do you have seven devices to go on?
So it was like, I mean, I was in sessions where I would see a student ask their teacher, like, hey, can I, my grandmother needs me to run to the post office with her. I got to go walk the dog. And then, you know, just sometimes there was responsibility placed on children at home because they had other siblings there of maybe taking care of those as parents worked. I'm not sure. But also imagine those students then coming into school and having to relearn really being a student as what we knew beforehand and you know, sitting in a seat and asking to use the restroom and not eating a snack while you're in class. So lots of things that they might have gotten used to and now they kind of have to re-acclimate. So
no, absolutely. It was a challenge. I think there'll be some long-lasting effects that we can't see now that we will see at some point.
Certainly. I was telling someone that about that recently, especially back to the Common Core. It was rolled out for all grade levels at once instead of getting acclimated year by year. Once those kindergarteners came through 12th grade, then by then everybody would have had some experience of maybe learning a different kind of way than their parents learned in some instances. So now that we've kind of gone through that, now we have this pandemic and it really affects everybody. The schools, but those children who, you know, got their lives uprooted. And imagine a second grader right now has never been in school or a first grader. Correct. and starting out first grade. So where you really learn those things in kindergarten or that transition year from fifth to sixth grade or eighth to ninth grade. It's going to be a lot of time before we hopefully recover from that. We're not done yet. I mean, we're not done. Teachers now are being dealing with, like, you know, their attendance lists, having students that are at home for quarantining for 10 days. And so kind of dealing with those effects too. Or there's teachers that I know that have a couple live periods, in-person teaching, and then one period a day, they're doing some like teaching to a class while also teaching virtually at the same time to students that are at home and quarantined. So,
but the paycheck's not going up for teaching two classrooms, right?
Well, actually, in one case, my friend that works in PG County, she is on that period where she teaches a virtual and in person. She is getting a slight increase.
Well, good. Well, I like that they're doing that because everyone was taught by a teacher, but somehow teachers are often not rewarded for the amount of time they put in. You know, we've all seen the meme or whatever. You know, you think teachers are glorified babysitters. That's cool. We'll pay them $10 an hour times every student they have.
Every child.
So if Paula has 34 in her class, I want $340 an hour times 7 hours a day. That's what I want.
Seven if she's lucky.
Right? Pay her $2,100 a day. She'll teach all day. You ain't got to worry about that, right?
I'll go back into the classroom.
Hey, so you know what? Excellent.
I did not leave the classroom because of pay, though. I mean, I was a DC public school teacher, and I think I was... I think the pay was pretty fair for having a master's degree in 17 years, a lot better than a lot of other states. I mean, I know DC's not a state, but we can only compare it to other states. That was not the pay wasn't the reason that I left. So,
well, you are, you know what, Katie? Hook, line, and sinker. Next question. At some point, DCPS no longer did it for you. What was it that led you to drift away from the public school setting?
Well, like you heard, I was in the classroom for 17 years. Actually, four of those years, I was an instructional coach to support teachers in the middle school for first just coaching in general, and then specifically a math coach. Prior to that position, I had earned a master's degree at George Washington in reading and in language arts. But don't tell my boss, since I do support math teachers. And then as the instructional coach, I decided to go back into the classroom for a couple more years because I felt like just the way it was set up as coaching and sort of the environment, I felt like I was going to be more impactful to the students' success in the classroom myself instead of through the teacher at that point. I had had a stroke on the way to school one day, day before my 38th birthday for not maybe associated with teaching. I mean, I spent a good amount of hours focused on school and on my students, you know, bring home a bag every day, grading those papers. I had 150 students a day. Some classes had 36 students in it. And, you know, you had to try to run to the restroom between classes or it was a lot. Of course, I gave it my very best. I also felt like there was a lot of initiatives that the school brought on itself. So anything to support, again, those test scores to bring those up. So, you know, our principal signed up for a lot of different things. Math didn't have as many as reading did, but I just felt like, you know, people's time was being taken by going to a training on a specific initiative every week instead of using that time to analyze data and try to plan differentiated activities for the students that are in their class, because we all know then, and even more so now, that not all 150 students came with the same background knowledge. They don't have the same interests. They don't learn the same way. So kind of thinking about what was best for them, you didn't really leave you a lot of time for that. Those types of things, you know, hall duty between classes. I don't know how you could be in your class while also watching the hallway at the same time. And only the classroom teachers were responsible for that. None of the other building staff members. And there was just as many non-education staff as there were as teachers. And like, why aren't they doing hall duty and helping out with this so we can just be in our class?
You quit because of hall duty? Katie, did you quit because of hall duty?
No. I said those are pieces.
Right.
That's a very small piece. Most of it was I just felt overall that their slogan was children's first, but their philosophy was not children first. So I said, it's just something that's on the side of your police cars. It's not, it's not really happening. So at that time, given, you know, my own health, just the wear and tear of being a classroom teacher for a long time, even if it's just 1 year. And I just felt at that time that somebody else could serve those students better than I could. So I felt like I had to step away to essentially save my own life. Remember, I did mention a few minutes ago that I had a stroke and I was out of school for a week. Not one administrator from my school reached out to me, and I realized I could drop dead and they will replace me the next day. Yep. As a side note, my paternal grandmother, on the day of her retirement, walking with a box to her retirement party, had a heart attack and passed away. And I said, I am not living that life. I'm not going to just live to not enjoy life. So it took me a couple more years, and my friends in Florida, one of my best friends from college, invited me to, you know, she talked to me a lot and was like, you don't have to keep doing that just because it's the thing that you do. So fortunately, she and her husband gave me a place to land when I jumped off. jumped off.
Hook, line, and sinker, Katie. I mean, you're just, dude.
I know.
The next question. Right? Here's the question. We moved to Florida and your life takes a turn, and now public service becomes something that is more in the forefront of Katie's purpose. So now take it from here, Katie. Can I leave the show? It says somewhere on here, conversations with Curtis, right? Go
this
for it.
This is what happens when you're stuck with someone at over 20 years as a friend.
I guess.
So yes, fortunately, my friend Stacy and her husband Sanjay invited me to have a safe place to land in Florida. And so for a few months, it was really just, you know, enjoy the coastline. We lived about a quarter mile from the beach on the Atlantic Ocean side. We were on the Barrier Island there in Satellite Beach. And we went to San Francisco for a few weeks with while Sanjay was working. And then, you know, we'd take walks along the beach in Florida. We'd go to the gym. And then we went to Seattle for a work trip, and that's when I started applying for the job that I have now. But as a side note, so that was the summer of 2015 that I moved there. As that year progressed, as we know, there was an election in 2016, a presidential election. And earlier on, at the end of 2015, the beginning of 2016, we really started getting interested in Bernie Sanders. And so we started doing, we had events at our house to sign up volunteers to learn a little bit about him. And then at the end of January of 2016, we decided through Stacy's organizational skills to round up people from across the country to gather in Iowa to knock on doors prior to the first primary in Iowa of 2016. So we took a bus from Florida for about a day to get to Iowa, and then we knocked on doors there for the entire weekend, went to a rally for Bernie. Of course, the outcome of that primary, I think, was pretty much 50-50 with Hillary and Bernie. I went to my very first in-person caucus there, which was very interesting because I never lived in a place where we did caucuses that way. So it was interesting to kind of see how the neighborhood comes together and sort of moves around to support their person and how that district wins their votes. And then, of course, through the rest of that election year, we did what we could, making phone calls. I probably made thousands of phone calls for Bernie. And then after Bernie did not win the nomination, just really working to get people to get out and vote, like register to vote, get out to vote. We did a lot of work for so that was what we did for the national level. And then we also really focused on local candidates for the 2016 election, but also the midterms in 2018. My housemate Sanjay, he ran for Congress in 2018 during that midterm election. So did a lot of work with him. I was his treasurer. So not only was I knocking on doors and making phone calls for him, but also, you know, balancing his budget and collecting any contributions, but also accounting for any disbursements that we did. And he raised, I think, close to $500,000. So that was a lot that I had to keep track of.
Sure.
Interesting to have that perspective, and it's really important. I mean, I know we always want people to vote, but to really be informed and aware of the local things that are happening, what referendums are being voted on. We worked really hard on a 5% or a half cent sales tax that will last for 10 years to help raise money to save the lagoon down there. So that's the kind of thing we need to reach across the aisle. And, you know, we need more than 50% of the community to vote for that, to have that tax increase. And it ended up turning out well for us. But yeah, the national level is definitely important, as we know, especially this week, balancing, I think, whether or not they passed a budget. But really, it's really also important to know what's happening locally and support those candidates there.
Well, I'm not going to talk about the fact that I have my next question. You already answered it. You already answered talking about the campaigns and projects that you were part of. So we'll skip that question. Thank you very much.
All right.
Moving forward even more, you moved back
to
Maine.
Sorry for stealing your thunder.
No. This is, hey, right now it's the Curtis and Katie show. That's what we're doing here. Moving forward even more, you moved back to Maine. Education is still a part of your purpose. And, thank you. You have tutored the kids, my kids. So that's worked out very well. Earlier you mentioned you come from a big family, brothers and sisters. There's 7 brothers and sisters total, right?
Yes.
Okay. So in more recent years, you and your family experienced a tragedy. And I'm hoping you share that with us, because there's someone listening who, even if they don't know they need to hear it, they need to hear it. Or even if they don't know they want to hear it, they want to hear it. So talk to me there.
So thank you for asking about that. So yes, I am one of 7, and the oldest of my brothers, he was 2 years younger than me, passed away on Good Friday of 2017, so just a couple of days before Easter, of a heroin overdose, ending for him a really long battle with addiction. I wasn't living in Portland for most of that, but of course I was still, I still saw it, still experienced that over the years, holidays and talking to my other siblings and my parents and even him, of course. Probably started, if I had to guess, from the, I think he got injured around like 92, maybe hurt his back, and start the painkillers that were prescribed. So, and then it just kind of builds up from there, if I had to kind of guess as to how that happened and how that rolled out. So lots of years of addiction, building up to heroin, lots of years of gambling, of, some jail time, some theft of, I don't know how many things he's stolen, but to support that addiction, right?
Sure.
Sometimes I feel bad not knowing enough about his story like that. But just know that we always wanted the best for him and did what we could. Sometimes it was hard to what do you give him to help him if he's trying to find a place to stay or trying to find a meal, and how are you going to use this? So really just supporting, like reach out to family and find someone, there are people that love you a lot. I can't solve an addiction problem, but I can be there as a support to know that you're loved. I have my own addictions. It just doesn't happen to fall in the family of heroin and opioids. I think sugar and eating bad food is certainly an addiction that's killing us over time. But at that time, my parents had temporary custody of, his oldest son and his youngest daughter, as a kind of giving them a safe place to be while my brother, who was their father, and their individual mothers were trying to heal and recover. So the youngest daughter is with her mom now. So hopefully she's on a good, healthy path. The oldest son, unfortunately, his mom passed away from a heroin overdose as well. So he's a 20-year-old now, with both of his parents are lost. And it's hard, you see things in throughout the days, or that kind of maybe a song that comes on that makes you think of that person. And I don't know, for anybody who's listening, there is certainly a community. People love you a lot. And I hope that you find the support that you need to get you on the track that you need to be to have a healthy life.
Well, you say support. That's excellent. I'm glad you said that, because my next question then is, we spend so much time trying to support and help people who battle addiction or depression or whatever they may be going through. Who supports you though, Katie? Who supports the family? That's the support piece for that person, because there's a recovery for you too. There's a recovery while you're going through this with them, or there's support that you need. There's a recovery after that person, your brother, passed. So are we spending enough time with that? Because you, it may take a lot out of you, even if you're helping a family member who is sick, substance abuse sick, or needs your help, that can weigh on you as well. So where does that support piece come in?
That's a great question. I'm not sure what the answer is. I think talking to friends, checking in with people regularly, even though I've never gone the route of more professional support in terms of counseling, it might be something that would definitely be helpful. I know lots of great counselors. Again, I haven't done this myself, but definitely reaching out to a community that, unfortunately, there's more and more people that have experienced this. On the day my brother passed away, I was in Stacy and Sanjay's kitchen. I remember the meal Sanjay was cooking, and my father's, the phone rang with my father's name on it. And I, unfortunately, something's wrong because dad's calling in the middle of the day. But in that same instance, Stacy is one of my best friends. Her brother also passed away from a heroin overdose a few years before that. So to be in that place where both of us experience that same thing and just have one another to lean on. So certainly reach out to the community, family, friends, and hopefully, talk about it. And if you see somebody is having a challenge, and just keep on trying to work on finding out how we can best kind of connect with those people and help them out, because what else are we if we're not a community and take care of one another? What's the point? So
interesting.
I'm not sure if I've used the appropriate supports. Who knows if I'm, and you're right, there's a lot that's on all of our shoulders, and really just it's looking out to make sure that kind of thing is healed. And I'm not sure it's healed all the way for everybody impacted. And that kind of plays out in other situations. So really need to reflect and to look back at that and kind of think about what instigating problems there are that could affect something else, whether it stems from that or whatever it is. So.
Wow. Katie, we can talk all day, couldn't we?
We sure could.
Well, we recently sat by a fire. We've done that, right?
Yes, we have. That was a nice, always nice to be welcomed around the fire with your family. So
yes, yes. Well, we have not done a cookout in quite some time. You were a staple of cookouts. You know what? We started our Super Bowl party tradition with you, and we haven't seen you in several years behind that. But we should get there. And we started Deep Creek with you too, didn't we?
I'm not sure. I think so. I've only been to Deep Creek a couple times with everybody, and I think it might have. I don't think there was anybody before me. I think the first time I was at Deep Creek was at your birthday party.
Well, you were part of the original crew. I'm sure of that.
The smaller groups, which was always really fun to get away. At that point, I was living in Maryland, really close to DC, so kind of get a pretty close by getaway was really what we needed. So I think in terms of support, coming back to that, really looking for the joy and not just making work or finding ways to pay the bills the only thing that's in your life. Of course, that's important, but we need to keep those connections, family, friends, selected family, the friends who become family.
Absolutely. That's my choice. We love it.
Right. So, I still love the family, but all of those people, we want to make sure we stay connected with the healthy relationships, try to work on building some that might not be so healthy, and just really take care of ourselves to make sure we're fully balanced.
Well, we would love to. I am going to do my 50th up there, just so you know.
All right.
So we're planning that now, because a year to the day, I want to make sure I have it finalized, but that is certainly going to be part of my 50th. Katie, would love to.
As long as I don't have to sleep on a pull-out couch this time.
Well, look, Katie, look, I don't know what we're doing, what we're renting, what we're doing. Look, I mean, you're telling all my business now, all my business.
There was a lot of family and friends there. So.
All right. So you get it. You get it. Katie, like I said, we're going to have to do this again. You were a guest on the Curtis and Paula Show in an impromptu fashion several months ago. So we'll have to, I think Chelsea knows it was April something. Like she knows when this was.
She's
so
good.
We'll have to do this again.
April 23rd.
Is that what she said? Well, she must know.
Yeah, it was my nephew's birthday. So we remember.
Ah, okay. All right, excellent. I got you. All right, Katie, I'm going to ask you to go backstage and you and I are going to reconnect in just a moment.
All right.
You know, of course, thanks for joining the conversation, taking the time to chat it up with me. Hang on a minute and we're going to get you off stage. But ladies and gentlemen, this is Katie Talbot.
Thanks, Katie.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that will do it for today's episode of Conversations with Curtis. Be sure to connect with me socially at Curtis Talks on Instagram and Twitter. And the website, of course, is www.curtistalks.com. You can also email me with podcast ideas. And if you'd like to be a guest or know of someone who should join the conversation, that's Curtis and Paula, Curtis with a K, at gmail.com. Don't forget to check out our podcast family, The Curtis and Paula Show, Take a TO with Turner and O'Neill, The Midnight Truck Stop, and of course, 911 Radio, hosted by Big T and The Blue Knight. You'll find our family of podcasts just about everywhere and anywhere you get your podcast content. Thank you for joining the conversation today. Feel free to spread the word. And as always, thank you, Khadija. We'll see you next time.
Crosstalk, Conversations with Curtis, can be heard on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Music, and just about anywhere podcasts can be found.
From Washington, D.C. to Ocean City, Woodbridge to Columbia, Richmond to Virginia Beach, the hottest DJs are right here. The Mid-Atlantic Professional DJ Association.
Dynamic DJ Entertainment, the most experienced professional DJ service in the DMV. For 35 years, our DJ talent has been the energy behind more than 14,000 events. If you're planning your wedding, school dance, corporate event, Sweet 16, or any event, our talented team has the right mix of music and MC skills to bring the energy and turn any event into an epic event. In 35 years, our DJs have performed in front of more than 2 million guests in 26 states. Our services include dynamic DJ talent, karaoke, giant games, atmospheric effects, movie nights, and more. Contact us today and let's make your next event an epic event. Dynamic DJ Entertainment. Visit thepartybeginsnow.com or call 301-942-4500 to get the party started.